I like to get a bunch of men together.
Okay.
Men that are the hardest of the hard. And I want to be with these men.
It's the Catechin. The month was March, the year 2014. A young, fresh-faced, I believe 20, 21-year-old myself, watching the Kentucky-Wichita State game when it was winding down into the closing minutes. I got so excited that we hit Big Shot that I peed myself a little bit. And then the following Louisville, Michigan, and Wisconsin game, I had the thought, should I pee myself? And you know what I did? And you know what? We found ourselves all the way in the championship game this year in the Champions Classic before it started. Through an error of my own, I zipped up the pants a little too quick, and I'm doing it, as Rick Pitino would say, right down my leg. And tonight, in the closing minutes of the second half and through overtime, I knew what I had to do, and that was to piss all over myself. And I'll tell you, I'll stop doing it when it stops working. Fellas, tonight, Kentucky beat Gonzaga 90-89. How are we feeling?
What the hell just happened, man?
I'll tell you what happened.
Yeah, you go.
Mark Pope is the GOAT. That's what happened, Braden.
I might say.
Halftime.
Any thoughts on that? Any thoughts on that one, Braden? That Mark Pope's the freaking GOAT?
Yeah, I told you. Number one. Yes. Number two, man, y'all got beat down so hard by Calipari, because the second it was 10 points, 15, like, not a person in the world is believing, man. It just doesn't matter how you get it done, you got it done. They won the game. And it's a hell of a win, too. I can't believe you missed those two foul shots at the end to make us sweat it and to make you pee a little more, probably. But hell of a win, though. Hell of a
happy
win.
Happy to pee more, by the way. Happy to pee more.
You do it right now.
I'm still wearing the same pants. This grind will stop.
15 for 15 is such a come up from the last game, and then we missed the three next ones. It's brutal, man. But it was just enough to make me pee a little, you know.
If you had told me that we could pick one to win between this and the Clemson game, not just me, every single Kentucky fan would say, "Give me the Gonzaga one."
Yeah,
I think I said that this is like, I know fashion. The one I thought they'd lose, and I thought they'd win this game. I did predict they'd lose this game because I can't predict anything right. So you're welcome. Kiss of death reversed. There you go. 90-89.
I do want to defend us, though. You said not any person in the UK fan base was a believer. We sat there and said, people are ridiculous. They're talking about, I'm going to turn this game off. I'm not going to watch the second half. It isn't worth it. I'm going to go to bed. And we said, what? What kind of fan does that make you? And, you know, whatever. It's your own fandom. Enjoy it how you want. But I'll watch my team. I don't care if I think we're going to lose. I just want to watch, and this is why.
It's their loss. They're the ones who missed the comeback. The fun is the experience of being down so low and able to experience the high. If you're skipping out on the low like that, you're never going to know how it felt to have that comeback and win that game.
Yeah.
That's why I use the belt. No, I'm just
with my dad.
I think, this was a classic 1990s cardiac Cats game.
True.
And that's something I think that Kentucky fans are going to have to understand a little bit, is that we play at a pace now where a 16-point deficit is not a death knell.
And we thought in the beginning of the year that if a team got up big on us, that we're like, hey, with the way we shoot, we're never quite out of a game. And you know what? We didn't even shoot that good.
No. Yeah. Our second half splits, I think, on twos were really – it was really good. But that's because we were just playing fast and getting really good looks at the rim, and our big dudes were – taking the contact and finishing their shots. But yep. it felt like I I wish I could have heard whatever Mark Pope said at halftime. Because whatever he did, those dudes came out with – they had to wear larger underwear in the second half.
I would imagine it was probably something along the lines of just stick to the plan, man. Like that, he's mm-hmm. pretty steady and even keel with his approach. I doubt it. I bet we'll see it in the recap video that's inevitably going to be put out. But I think it was probably just more of the same. Just like continue to battle, continue to fight. You know, eventually you'll get there. And we played really good defense at times. I mean, it was. I'm sure he said some good stuff, but I bet you it was a little bit player driven too. At least said it as many times. So I'd be curious to see as well.
Yeah, but that Lamont halftime speech might have been
tearjerker.
He's like,
probably.
You guys all heard all week that you were if it depended on if I was going to play or not. That's bullshit.
I don't know that that's exactly the speech you give as the guy who isn't playing and the team is down 16 when you're trying to motivate them.
It would have got me up.
You guys don't need me.
Oh my gosh.
You heard all week long that without me you'd struggle, and look where we are.
I'm dispensable.
Speaking of Kerr, did we ever get any, like, was it cramps? It was obviously worse than cramps, right? It was something.
I don't know.
I don't know. I
terrifying.
Yeah, we'll have to see there. The one thing that's comforting is that even after he went out, I think we made do at point guard pretty well. Jackson really stepped up. He had a couple of just great distributions that really helped us down the stretch.
Go ahead, buddy. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm fired.
Oh, no. If you told me before the game, A, Lamont's not going to play, B, relatively, you know, halfway through the second half, Kerr's going to go out, and we're not going to play Travis Perry either in a point guard role, I'd be certain we'd lose. So to find a way to win despite that adversity at that position. Also, despite some pretty significant foul trouble, I think Robinson had 4, Carr had 4, and Brea had 4 in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And Carr had 4 forever and played through it, which is awesome. It's nice that you can trust him to do that. It's not that he's not a physical player either. So some really encouraging stuff.
Yeah, and he risked it all to win the game at the very end because he would have fouled out. If he had fouled, but he clinched it, which, you know, when you have 4 fouls and you got to do what you got to do, he did it.
Kind of a backdoor clinch by missing a couple of free throws there, making me really nervous, but, you know, all the same.
Yeah.
Same thing, guys. Same thing happened at the Duke game.
Guys, listen to me very closely. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? During halftime, people on Twitter were still writing that we need a bucket getter.
Oh, his name is Jackson Robinson, son.
The man's name is Jackson Robinson, and I'm so happy for Jackson that he was able to show that tonight, because it is so unfair that an entire fan base is on him to carry the team. They think that we need Jackson to carry the team. What I want is I want Jackson to play well for Jackson, because that's unfair pressure to put on him. And I feel like when people watch Jackson play, when he makes a shot, they're like, good, Jackson should be making these shots. And when he misses one, we make a note of that in our head. And that is mm-hmm. super unfair to do. And we don't do that to other players. But guess who came through in the clutch tonight? Jackson.
J-Rob.
Robinson.
No, he played great. Like the little floater that he was hitting at the end of the game. I mean, he absolutely carried that at the end at the point, and they said before the game that he may be doing that. I doubt he meant that he thought he'd be playing the point that much, but like, what?
Yeah,
great effort by him.
Yeah,
he caught I think Garrison flash into the basket, a dime to him.
Oh yeah,
dude, Kerr had some sick passes too. Those bounce passes that they made twice, I think, tonight were just beautiful.
Some people owe Kerr Kreese some apologies.
Yeah. I mean, he shaved his head. He looked like a freaking baller out there. Then he goes down. I was worried. Yeah. He got his first charge. He was
finally.
Hyped. He was so hyped about that. I was hyped.
I said when we were talking that I think Kerr gets like the worst whistle in the country. And I think sometimes he maybe tries to sell it, and maybe they see that and then are less inclined to give him calls that he deserves. But he and I don't know that I thought that that was a great charge call either. But I think there were enough actual charges that got called as blocks that I'm fine with it.
I was gonna say they hardly ever call the charge this season. I feel like there's been an emphasis in the change of the rule or something because it almost never gets called. Like even ones that I'm like, oh, that's a charge, and you think the ref's gonna hit you with the nope block every time. I was glad to see him get one at least.
And most of the time for this team, it's been Kerr that are textbook charges in previous years that are just not being called.
The one against Duke where he went flying was pretty crazy. I mean,
it was. That was a bad call.
Right.
That was a bad call.
I can't wait to see the like all of the numbers that come out just checking, splitting that up between the first half and the second half. But to see the commitment.
Bad.
The commitment in the second half to running the offense like it runs when Butler's on the court by default, they did just amazingly. And it doesn't even come down to like the coaching changes of Owe being guarding Nembhard where and shut him down in the second half and then playing a little bit of zone, mixing it up. We went on a 16-2 run or something at the beginning of the second half. All that stuff was like good coaching X's O stuff. But
I think the 13-0
whatever
run
they
in the second half.
Yeah.
13-0.
Gosh. But the getting that entire team down like they were down. Everybody in the world is like, dang, this is what a Lamont Butler-less 2024 Kentucky Wildcats team looks like. To get them to commit and play hard. There was no loose ball that didn't have somebody jumping at it in the second half. Whatever human coaching he did, masterclass. Good stuff.
We were getting out rebounded by 10 in the first half. We were down 10 rebounds, and we ended the game plus one. Mm-hmm. We fought our tails off this game.
So in the first half, Nembhard was 8 points on 4 of 6 shooting. Second half, 2 points on 1 of 3. First half, 3 boards, 7 assists. Second half, 1 board, 2 assists.
What about an overtime, though?
That's not on here, but
yeah, I got it. I got it.
3 points on 1 of 3 with 1 board and 1 assist.
That's what I didn't know if you hit two threes in overtime or just one. But.
It is funny that they hit 3 of their 6 threes in overtime.
They really get 3-point defense.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. As soon as every Kentucky fan started feeling like, okay, we're about to go up 8 with 2.5 minutes to go. This feels great. Then it was
nice.
Two threes back to back. Missed free throws on our end. I think just.
They had to give the people
much
a
more
shot.
Stressful than it needed to be. Yeah.
Yeah. But whatever play he drew up to get that Jackson Robinson bucket, and then also Jackson Robinson just willing that bucket, just great last minute of coaching as well to close it out.
We did a great job getting guys, you know, looks at the basket and drawing up. Mm-hmm. Like we were missing the bunnies in the first half.
Yeah,
and the second they started falling, the tides started turning in the game.
I thought that play where they drew up at the end of regulation to throw that lob to BG or to Amari, excuse me, was a great play design, really good defense by Gonzaga. But that, like Otega had that thing right there, would have been jammed down ended in regulation. I thought that was going to happen for sure. But
yeah, for EK to overtime in the EK in the air made the switch from going to block the shot to blocking the pass, and that was just you can't hardly. Expect that to have been what he was going to do. That's really good defense.
And also to the Gonzaga fan that commented on the last video, said I don't know ball because I only talked about EK and Nembhard. Okay, talk to me again. What happened? EK and Nembhard, your best players, for sure. Like, it was pretty apparent. So
I think Battle had a good first half.
But they got good players. I'm saying when we do a 10-minute review of a team, I mean, I got the gist of it. So
that's not true. We mentioned Braden Huff by name, and he played 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's a deep cut. Look at us.
He had two
whole
points.
Even more to my point. Just saying, buddy.
I feel like what's the negative spin on this team after the game? Because after the Duke game, it was, well, Duke wasn't hitting threes. I feel like it's going to be the same for this one, because up until the last few minutes, Gonzaga couldn't buy a basket from beyond the arc. But does Lightning strike twice, or do we play some pretty good 3-point defense?
You played good 3-point defense up until the Georgia State game, and they gave us some threes there. But like, this is the worst Gonzaga 3-point shooting team that I think Few's had in like a decade. So it's kind of par for the course for them.
And we do currently have the number 6 3-point defense. Our opponents are averaging like 25% from three, which is well below the average of just 33%. So that's helpful.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, because it's a trend, you can't just say the team was missing from three every time we beat a good team that doesn't shoot well. That's part of our team's identity. That's something that we work on and strive to take away. So I think that you need to give us credit for that when we hold teams to bad shooting percentages.
Kirk Risa goes out with, what, 8 minutes to go or something like that? We beat Gonzaga with no point guards. True point guards.
Well, are you guys ready to do our in-depth Colgate preview, or are we just going to
Yeah, we need to.
I was going to make one more point.
Yeah.
About the turnovers. They took care of the ball, only 7 turnovers. They had, I think, 12 or 13 against Clemson in a game that's decided, you know, both of them were decided by less than 5 points. So, you know, big time there to only have the 7 turnovers. But that was the last thing I had on that game.
No Lamont Butler. No problem. We need Lamont Butler back, though.
We do.
Yeah. That's my last take would be at Clemson, we saw what we were with and without Lamont Butler on the floor. It was brutal, the efficiency for both offense and defense. And then here, the first half, we were like playing that same way we were playing when Lamont wasn't on the court at Clemson. But in the second half, it's like something clicked where the offense was running correctly. It wasn't, there was no check engine light on. It was just going. And it's like, if we can do that and have lineups without Lamont Butler on the court that still get this offense running like it's supposed to run, this is a elite team.
Yeah. 2 top 10 wins, man.
Yeah.
We played without our starting point guard in basically an away game.
It was an away game.
Opt-in team and came out with the dub.
After being down by 16, you know how psychologically hard that is?
I'm thinking we're back.
We never left.
I never had a doubt in my mind that we were going to win this game.
What's up, Ben?
One thing, too. In the first half, I felt like we couldn't buy a shot in the paint. Layups, Amari was missing some two-footers. Jackson and Owe both missed some off the glass. Shots that we usually hit. And then in the end, we won the points in the paint 48-44. So I think we maybe deviated from our normal game plan offensively. But we made it work. And we made it work against a really, really good team, a really, really good defensive team. And I thought always defense on Nembhard in the second half made all the difference.
It's huge. A great point.
We made 7 twos in the first half.
Jeez.
Very cool.
In the second half, we made 15.
Danger.
And then 5 in OT.
Braden, we were talking before we all got on to record. I was talking to Ben and Caleb about this. Or is it Kale? Because it says Kale on the...
It's Kale. Today it's Kale.
Oh, okay. Me, Kale, and Ben were talking. Do you think that maybe the poor... Because, you know, I may be a stupid idiot. So let me know if I'm wrong. Do you think the poor shooting percentage that we've been seeing from three last game and this one could maybe be because Lamont Butler has been out and he's kind of our, you know, drive to the basket, like distributor type. So we're taking a guy who would normally be a spot-up shooter in Jackson or Owe, and now we're having them drive the basket?
I think it's part of that. I think another part of it that I would say is more the scouting on Mark Pope and his offense is the three. We're going to run up the 3-point line. I mean, Berea can't breathe out there. I mean, they're switching, doubling, going over. I mean, they're doing everything in their power to not. And I think what our guys are doing a better job of, or did a better job of, much better job in the second half is playing off that, distributing off that rather than swinging it around. But I do think it's more to do. Lamont has a piece of it like here, but like Lamont's not a great 3-point shooter. I mean, he's been better, but it's not really. And I know what you're talking about. Get him in the key, yeah, he kicks and drives. But other guys can drive. I think more of it is that it's the game planning. The film's out. I mean, when they know we want to shoot 33, and we really. I mean, what did Brea go? 1-for-6 today. I mean, they were all over that dude.
Yeah.
And
Maybe that's why we're taking it to the post so much, that trying to get them to crash down to sort of counter that so we can kick it back out?
In theory, you'd like to. 3 is more than 2, but I think what really changes is that if you get run off the 3-point line, because if they're coming at you full speed, you got to take the drive to the key. You got to take those type of plays that they're given to you. Missing 5 layups in the first half wasn't ideal. I think we went like 8 of 13 overall. Like, I don't think we missed any in the second half. 6-for-6 on dunks, which is good. But yeah, I think it's more so the game planning. I mean, Gonzaga is extremely good. They have the best point guard in the country. And EK is really good. They just have a lot. I mean, it's just a good squad. It's a huge win, man. It's a top 10 win all the way across the country. Like, are you kidding me? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Without Butler, too? My goodness.
Yeah, but nobody predicted this one. Nobody predicted this one. Everybody felt vindicated on all of their takes at halftime. And now they're going to all have to think about that a little bit. What I think Butler does bring to the offense, I guess, would be, so there's the commitment thing, and Mark Pope talked about that. People aren't committing to our offense. And it's like, in the first half, you saw people hesitate instead of like just executing, and either, you know, passing it out or making a decision and making the right decision. And also I felt like that's why we missed so many twos. Was like they didn't know they were going to shoot it until they were jumping, and then it was a weak ass shot. But they committed. I don't know what he did. I don't know what Space Jam ball he gave the boys.
Did you feel like the effort was not there in the first half? Because I felt like we were playing hard. I just felt like we were just missing some shots. I mean, I know. Yeah, I mean, of course, you're down 16. It's not been great, but I mean, I felt like I didn't see like anyone like you know, heads hanging low or dry. I felt like they were trying to keep like the bench still active.
No.
I felt like there was good energy. I didn't think it was.
There was a few live balls that didn't have enough chase down, and that is like the one thing people grasp onto when they think about effort.
I'll have to rewatch it. I couldn't recall.
There was like a few. There was a few times that happened.
Right. And to exacerbate that problem, it felt like Gonzaga was after every one of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were diving, they were hustling. So maybe that made it seem worse than it was.
Yeah, it's always different the second time through. I'll have to watch it again. Sorry, go ahead,
Dan. No, I was just gonna say I'll have to pay attention on rewatch.
Well, fellas, anything else we want to cover before we kick it over to the callers?
Well, Godspeed to all of us. Let's go.
Nope.
Okay, bad news. We ran into some technical difficulties, so we're not going to be able to do calls tonight. But hey, it's still a Catechin, baby. We still beat Gonzaga. And I will say this. Your other UK podcasts, and I'm not going to name names, but they were, let's say, dooming at halftime when they were saying, hey, like, let us know your thoughts. Oh, hey, Kentucky can't get a basket right now. Do you know who are the only ones to not start dooming this team at halftime? That's your boys at the Catechin here. And who was ultimately proven right? That's your boys at the Catechin here. And that's why you keep coming back. That's why we're the fastest growing UK sports podcast the internet has to offer.
Hell yeah. Exactly.
Run it back from the top. The year was 2014.
Look, man, he peed his pants and we're all better off for it. But truthfully, though, like, it's crazy how negative it gets. I get being frustrated, but like, personal direct attacks on players is crazy. Just absolutely acting like the season's over is crazy. Hell, even Matt Jones talking about this offense is going to run through the center at the top of the key. It's going to be the death of him. Bro, that's the offense. Like, come on, man. Like, I'm not, you know, it's his tweet directly. I'm not trying to talk, you know, we fans of the show. But we need, like, and I'm not trying to alienate anybody, but it's crazy how negative. This is a great team, man. Two top 10 wins. Already.
And I would never say anything bad about Matt Jones. Please let us guest host over the summer.
No, I'm saying that even it got to the point where that man's being negative. You know, I'm not dogging him. It's just true. It's what he said. I read a tweet and read it out loud right now. So I love that they won the game. It feels like it could be a lot more enjoyable experience if we had a little bit of belief, you know. But I think if that doesn't give you some belief in this team, I don't know what will. But, you know, maybe don't turn the game off at halftime. See what happens.
I think it might be John Calipari PTSD, because when this team starts getting down or things of that nature, we are now predisposed to think like, well, it's done. You know, we can't come back from 14 down. That's going to take us more than what time is remaining to come back from that.
And also,
you'll see stuff like, oh, why won't Pope play Travis Perry? Because Calipari didn't play Derek Willis for two seasons, because Calipari would have his guys. I don't think that's what's happening with Mark Pope. I think if you're good enough to see the floor, that you're going to play underneath Mark Pope.
Yeah.
But John Calipari has kind of put some brain rot into the fan base.
I'll say, Travis Perry played, and I mean, not a ton, but he played some today. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can figure out how many minutes.
Getting in on this game is pretty significant.
I think he played
He played 3 minutes and had a shot.
He's not ready yet, but he'll get there.
But he played.
He did, but I don't think it's the case of like Pope's not missing anything. You know, if Pope thought that Travis Perry could have a bigger impact on the game, Travis Perry would be playing more.
And
because we have a coach that we can trust, and we don't have to back.
And if he thought it would be good for great Travis Perry.
That was exactly the way to put it. Is we have a coach you can trust. Trust the man.
Yes.
I've been telling you since April. Trust Pope. I promise you.
It hasn't always been the case that we have a coach that knows more ball than us, but that is the case right now.
Yeah.
Well, and he proved it once again tonight.
Absolutely.
I got a soapbox a little bit, I guess. But
go off, King. Go off.
We complained for 15 years. Well, we complained for like 8 years about not having what you get with an elite coach. And now we're begging for what we did have before, which is a guy who can go get a bucket or whatever. I'm sick of hearing that. I'm sick of it. Because what we want is somebody who's going to be here for 20 years that can win these games. We need a coach that can go get a bucket. And that's what we have.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
Yeah, this team doesn't have a superstar. Mark Pope is our superstar.
He is a ball.
I bet Mark Pope can also go get a bucket, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
He gets buckets, bro. Absolutely.
He draws up amazing. He had Mark Few in a blender. Mark Minnie had Mark Few in a blender.
Second half. And that's the thing I think that's the best part of it is like he legitimately like is pretty steady. That's one thing that you guys talk a lot about Calipari, like in the teams before, like kind of if they get down, it's over. I like Jackson almost seems to play better when it's like he's doubted a little bit. And I don't know if you could tell the swag was there, like even with the floater in the lane, the defense, it just like the emotions were great. I didn't realize they got down by 18 at one point. I didn't realize that. I just saw that. That's huge, man. And, you know, trust in Pope, man. He's going to take you there. I promise. What is game 8? And you got two of those are top 10 wins. That's pretty phenomenal. And another game you rightfully very well could have won. Didn't, but still, I mean, don't wait too much longer to get on this bandwagon.
Well,
it's about to pop off.
Well, the other thing I'll say is that the season is long. The SEC is going to be brutal. We are going to lose games. And that'll be fine. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. We've always lost games. Hopefully we lose very few of them. But I also trust Pope to learn from them, to help the team learn from them and grow from them, so that when March comes, we're not kind of writing it off as, yeah, it'd be nice to win, but I don't really care as long as these guys get drafted. You know, this is the goal. He understands the assignment. You know.
He said the thing.
But, but I think honestly that you can see the way he adjusts at halftime is probably similar to the way he adjusts game to game. And he's trying to move this team towards a goal. And I, at this point, all I can do is trust him to do that.
I think, too, another bit of this is, like, yes, in the SEC you lose a couple games, I'm sure, here or there, but, like, as an out-of-conference schedule, this win's so massive in the sense of, like, sure, you lost at Clemson, true road game, I get it, but to beat both Duke and Gonzaga, like, without this one, you still have the Duke win, but, like, it's a little bit, I mean, but this out-of-conference is now, I mean, assuming you don't drop one of these, you know, trap games coming up. This is a massive win. It's going to carry a lot of weight, kind of seeding time, and just to think, like, they've been in a game where they were down damn near 20 points against a top 10 opponent in which they won the game basically on the road. This, I mean, massive, massive win all the way around.
We have two wins against teams that are worst-case scenario three seeds in the tournament.
It's crazy if either fall that low, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so and they're neutral site games. Like, these are essentially what would – be simulated tournament games.
The Gonzaga one would be if we drew the worst luck draw, but yeah.
Yeah, and we're beating them down the stretch of these games. Like, we were watching the game together. I was saying, all we need to do is keep this within striking distance.
Mm-hmm.
And we do. They let us hang around, and then what happens? We're an older, veteran team that's well-coached, and that shows in these late-game moments.
Absolutely.
And I have no reason to think that's going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get better.
Shouts to Andrew Carr, by the way. We didn't talk about him going 8 for 12 with 19 points. I don't even know if we really mentioned him, but my gosh, what a game.
Yeah, he
played well.
Tony, he had to beat that Green Goblin mask saying, you should be a Zag, you should be a Zag.
Was that any of our player of the game? Was it in our predictions?
Who did I even say? Kerr? Probably. I don't remember who I said.
I picked Andrew Nembhard, which, by the way, I picked against Kentucky and we won. So
I did too for that exact reason. Did I not call you right after Jared and say that's the only reason I did that? I certainly did, because I legitimately every time, except for picking Louisville football, every time I picked. No, I stood on business with a Duke win though, but
absolutely.
I was there, so I knew it'd be okay.
Yeah.
Not that it ever matters, but I feel like when I'm at the arena, it's just it's a wrap. I haven't been to a loss in a long time for either team, so probably shouldn't go to games this year. It's bound to happen.
Fellas, we got anything else before we close this one out? I'm sure we'll be back in a few days to give further reflections on this one. We'll probably watch it back. I know I'm focused entirely on Colgate right now.
Hey, you and Mark Pope both, man. You're probably all over that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Brushing his teeth right now with Aqua Fresh.
One interesting stat tidbit I have is that on Bart Torvik's website, he uses the box plus minus as part of his player ratings for a game. And he also includes like a net box plus minus for the game, which, because box plus minus is per possession, the net sort of grosses that out for the minutes actually played in the game. So you can see sort of what the player's net points added or subtracted by participating are. And he has what's called a threshold win, which is when that net figure for a player exceeds the team's margin of victory. And we had five guys all have that. Robinson, Carr, Creesa, Williams, and Garrison. And he considers a player having that to be that player's performance was a difference in winning and losing. And maybe this is just a quirk because the game went to overtime and it was so close, but so his computer system considers all five of those guys individually to be the difference between winning and losing.
Kerr Creesa, But people were trashing Kirk Creese all week.
Yeah, man. Oh,
some of the stuff being said about Kirk Creese, and he's a chill. That dude is playing his ass off for the team. His teammates love him. Y'all relax a little bit on the Kirk Creese smoke. It's crazy to me. I've never seen that before. He's we're lucky he's here.
Dude caught a fish.
That he did.
He did. Shaved his head.
I think
too.
That might, like, next year, he's not going to go, like, play ball overseas or whatever. He's going to the wharf. He's opening a fish shop. He's looking way too natural. Next year. That's true.
Kirk Creese is the fishmonger.
Very, very wildcat of him to be catching fish like that.
Very true.
I don't know if that even happens, but it sounds like something that would happen in a nature documentary.
Probably.
All right, fellas, anything else?
On to Colgate.
Absolutely.
On to Colgate.
Yeah, Pat, on to Colgate. That.
Thank you for joining
the bottom
Catechin.
Of the barrel.
Please like and subscribe. For Kale.
And comment.
For Ben.
Never in doubt.
For Braden. We will chat it up with you in the comments. That's been the Catechin. Go Cats.
Go Cats.
Good night, boys.
Go Cats.